Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit olathekia.com.
The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's check in with Mike McFarland. What's up, Mike? How you doing?
Hey, sorry about the missed call there this morning. I'm out in California visiting the parents, and, you know, the time change gets to you in a little bit, and missed the call, so I'm sorry about that, Stephen.
That's all right. You just gave us more time to talk about K-State basketball because they're the headline. Did you catch any of that last night?
You think? Gosh, between that and then the Gonzaga game, this is like a huge time of year, obviously, but for any type of sports fan, my gosh. And then throw on top of it, you know, WBC that's just finishing up, opening days coming up. It's a tremendous time for sports, the month of March, that's for sure.
You know, something else I want to bring up to you, because I know you're a advocate of college baseball. Missouri and Kansas played at Kauffman Stadium this week, and it was significant for Mizzou because now they're ranked in the top 20, and they were coming off a sweep over the weekend of number 2 Tennessee, and then they had a dramatic ninth-inning victory that was tied going into the ninth, and they scored 5 runs and beat Kansas. But and it look, they will always be always an uphill climb for Mizzou in baseball in the SEC. But, I mean, they swept Tennessee, and they're, you know, ranked as high as number 15. They might have something going over in Columbia with Steve Beazer and the baseball team.
Without question. Quality athletes recruiting from the area around here, you know, which seemed to be a problem at times, you know, going to, you know, the so-called baseball states of California, Texas, and everything else instead of the homegrown talent, which is fantastic here in the Kansas City area. But, yeah, coach has really done a great job of turning that program around. The kids are buying into it. And sweeping Tennessee, one of the golden childs of the SEC, just tremendous. And a walk-off at Kauffman Stadium, you know, I love that. That the, you know, I remember when Mizzou played KU at Arrowhead, and now you're using Kauffman for baseball. It's just, I think it's great that the professional teams are allowing these things to go because it grows the game and gives the college athletes a little bit more exposure at some of these event centers. And all of that goes into it, I think it's huge that the pro teams are getting involved in broadening the scope of things here in the Kansas City area.
Okay, now for some bad news. I was following along on Twitter during the Royals game yesterday when I saw Andy Rogers tweet, Daniel Lynch is exiting the game with a trainer. And I'm like, oh boy. Then her next tweet was, Lynch threw a pitch and motioned Quatrero and the trainer to come to the mound. He pointed at his left shoulder. And then I'm like, oh boy. And then the next tweet.
Yeah.
Left the game with left shoulder discomfort. He'll have tests done to determine what it is and what's next. Matt Quatrero said, it didn't feel right, but who knows? Sometimes they get in there and test it, and it's not as bad as you think. But definitely some concern. Woof.
Tremendous amount of concern. Because you're a young player trying to establish yourself, so you're going to gut and grind through anything. And you saw the line that, you know, it wasn't a good outing for him. You knew something was off. He had been throwing well. The ball seemed to have a lot more life to it early on. And maybe it was something that he tweaked. Hopefully that's it. But still, it's going to set him back, you know, from, I think, on being on the roster because they have to make sure that everything's okay with that valuable arm. But okay, so if he goes down, it opens the door for someone else to step in and make the big league team. But yeah, very, very sad to hear that. And like I said, just, hey, it could be something he slept on it wrong and just felt funky when he woke up. But anytime when you're talking a pitcher and shoulder discomfort, it's like saying there's that discomfort in the elbow. Not a good sign.
All right, Mac, I'm going to use this to transition to something that you already referenced. Why are we even doing spring training if guys are getting hurt? How can we do this? You know, Hunter Dozier takes a ball off the lip in batting practice. He could have gotten a facial fracture. I mean, why are we even doing this? You know, I'm hearing we shouldn't be playing the WBC because guys get hurt. Why are we doing spring training? Guys are getting hurt.
It's called training. You can't just walk up, grab a bat, and face the velocity and spin and tilt and everything else that goes up. It is what it is. It's not like they're going out and playing nine innings every single day. You're working your body into shape. You absolutely, absolutely have to be at spring training. And heck, I remember when I was playing, I can't remember who it was, just shagging in the outfield. Some guy lost it in the sun, took it in the head. I mean, that can happen at any time. It's silly. It's the same thing with the WBC. You're representing your country. It is absolutely phenomenal growth for the game, especially when it comes down to the last couple days there with Japan and the USA. Just you can't ask for anything better. It's mini Olympics, basically. And if you don't think it means anything for, you know, those players wearing USA across their chest, it was great to see Jason Adam in there. Would have liked to have seen Brady Singer get a little more work because I think that might set him back a little bit trying to get his pitch count up. But he looks good. And just the experience and growth for them of playing in such a high-pressure environment. You can say, oh, I played in the College World Series. I did this. I did that. There's nothing like a stage like that to get these kids ready to go. So, no, you got to have all these things. And absolutely the WBC, I'd just like to see more of the superstars get involved for Team USA and go from there.
I was obviously I was being very tongue-in-cheek there, Mac.
Sarcasm. And
it's because I'm with you, man. I thought the World Baseball Classic was great. I'm not going to sit here and act like I watched every single game, but as it ramped up, I got more and more excited about it. I got to go to one of the games and then watch the final there. You mentioned more star power. Having guys like Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout out there as into it as they were, and Trey Turner being as, I mean, what a performance he put on. For stars like that to not only play, but really enjoy it, and then go back to their teams at spring training and tell them how great it was. How much of an effect do you think that'll have on other guys, their decision maybe to play the next time it comes around?
Well, when you see that final game and see Ohtani versus Trout, what else can you ask for crying out loud? I don't know. And then you can watch Salvi and just the joy that those guys have for playing for Venezuela, the DR and Puerto Rico, you know, the Latin American countries that you know mean so much to the people back home. It's huge for the growth of the game. I've said that before, but still, just a tremendous opportunity to go and represent your country and play a game that you love and represent a place where you grew up following your idols that played in the major leagues. For the young kids to watch, you know, Salvi take time away from his spring training and go out there and have a tremendous tournament. You can't put a price on that. Now, injuries are going to happen. Altuve, you know, the closer for the Mets, all of those things, they could happen at any time. Hell, they could, you know, like I think it was Arenado saying that he could step off a curb and twist an ankle, or, you know, Mike Soroka, who was walking to the training facility and re-tore his Achilles tendon, stuff like that happens. So it is what it is, but still, I don't think you're ever going to get some of those players that say, no, I don't want to go there because I might get hurt.
Mike McFarland is our guest. Opening day less than a week away. Are you starting to get at least a feel for what your expectations are for this edition of the Royals?
Yes and no. I do think that, you know, some of the numbers, especially for the hitters, might be skewed with some of the the pitchers being gone, and some of the hitters being out. But still, it was a chance for a lot of kids in for the Royals that are fighting to make that team to go out there and make their mark. I think Massey's done exactly that and worked his way onto the roster. And I just think it's been a good spring training for a lot of these kids. But again, don't get settled in and saying, okay, I made the team. You need to get off to a fast start, because I think this organization is going to make moves a lot quicker than in the past, when if you're not getting it done, it's not a right to be in the big leagues. It needs to be earned and sustained. So I think this organization is going to move some kids up and down as much as possible and try and find something that clicks and find a young kid that can get hot and stay in the lineup. I mean, Jackie Bradley has had a tremendous spring training as well, and showed that he's got something to fight for. There's a lot of good storylines going on into this season.
How big of a step do you think that the pitching staff will take forward as a whole, or are you expecting a step forward?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, crying out loud, especially the way Brady finished up last year. I'm glad Zach came back to give some of that leadership to these young players. Plus, you got a lot of these young guys that know what it takes and the routine and the grind that it is of playing in the major leagues. They're a little more seasoned now, so they're not going to be as starry-eyed. You know, there's going to be a little bit more pressure to perform, but I think they understand what's going on and how to achieve it. And more importantly, once you get to the big leagues, that's great, but then how do you establish yourself as a major league ball player on a consistent basis? That's going to be a big storyline here this upcoming season.
You mentioned Brady Singer, and we all wish he would have thrown some more innings during his experience with the WBC. But Bobby Witt Jr., he didn't play much. He only had a couple of plate appearances. But I was reading. We talked to Buster Olney, and there was also some comments about Bobby Witt Jr.'s experience that the Royals may have been a little bit, you know, concerned or unhappy that Singer didn't pitch more, but for Bobby Witt Jr., they didn't care how much he played or how many plate appearances he got, because they thought it was very important for him to get that experience, and that could help his development to be in the clubhouse, to be in that environment, a playoff-style environment with some of the biggest names in the game, to see how they go about their business, to see how they treat that type of level of competition. Do you buy into that? Do you think that benefited Bobby Witt Jr. to go through that experience and to be in that environment, even though he didn't play much?
100%. We have a superstar on our hands. You throw him in there and see how those superstars handle the pressure, continue their work ethic. It makes you want to achieve more. I think without a doubt, it was a tremendous success. I mean, every time you looked in the dugout and you saw Bobby, you saw this big, huge smile on his face, and sitting there and talking to some of the greatest players in the game, he's not stupid. Yes, he's been around the sport for a long, long time, you know, being the son of a former major leaguer, so that helped. But still, going and seeing how these guys deal with the pressure, the looseness that they have, and more importantly, the confidence they have, you know, even if they're 0-for-3 in a game, and how they go out and grind that last at-bat to keep some consistency in their game. Yeah, I mean, tremendous learning experience for him, and that's going to pay dividends for us when this team turns it around and gets us back going, because, yeah, he's the face of the franchise and a future superstar in the game.
Mac, to close things out, you said something a moment ago about how the new regime is maybe not going to be as patient with guys, and they're going to be willing to move guys up and down regardless, you know, of what their status is with the team. It's about production. I got to be honest, my initial reaction to that is refreshing to hear. Now, listen, the last regime, they were very loyal to players and very patient, and there were times when that paid off. They won a World Series, and they were patient with guys like Mike Moustakas when he really struggled for a long time. But I think over the last few years, as the team kept struggling, that kind of stuff starts to wear a little thin. So for me, I'm excited to see a different approach. Do you think it's going to be the right one? Do you like the direction that this thing is headed with the new regime?
Absolutely. And I think Mr. Sherman has said that. And there is going to be a little bit more accountability among the players. And like I said, it's not a birthright that you're going to be there, and once you are there, you're going to stay there. It has to be earned each and every day, and that's the grind of baseball. It day in, day out, day game after a night game, the travel, everything. One, you learn how to do it, which I think was huge for some of the young players last year. And two, how do I maintain some consistency, not only in my approach at the plate, but my ability to read the scouting reports as a pitcher and execute pitches with the location and everything that goes with that. It's a big learning experience for them last year, but now it's a different story. They have some time and seasoning under their belt, and it's time to take a step forward, or, hey, we'll find someone else that can come and get the job done for us from the minor leagues.
Mac, thank you for the time. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, boys. Have a good weekend.
That was Mike McFarland talking some Royals baseball opening day next week. Can't believe it. Here we go. Hey, if you want tickets, go to ticketsforless.com. Use the code STJOHN, and you can save some money. Marco sends you this tweet from the Bills guys. Aaron Wilson, who is a very good NFL reporter and has excellent information and is connected in NFL circles, was on WGR 550 this morning in Buffalo and called the Bills the leaders in the DeAndre Hopkins sweepstakes, and also says the Chiefs are very much in on the pursuit as well. Now, I know you can't play the old, keep it up with the Joneses and be too reactionary, but how much does it add to your desire for the Chiefs to acquire a young squire?
I was just thinking, boy, you're getting pretty rhymey over here.
Desire to acquire DeAndre Hopkins, or does it add anything if I told you if the Chiefs don't get him, the Bills will?
It takes my desire higher.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Or do you not care?
But that also rhymed. I was just trying to play along. But yes, no, I think that's a factor. Keep him away from one of your most closest, competitors.
Because I can promise you that's a factor with the Bills.
Right.
That's a factor with all these AFC teams. They don't want to see. Look, it goes like we say many times, what does your opponent want you to do and what do they not want you to do? I don't see any AFC teams out there, oh, I hope DeAndre Hopkins goes to the Chiefs. That'll help our chances. Every reaction is, dude, you cannot let Hopkins go to the Chiefs. You can't let this happen.
Right.
That's how all, I'm not talking about salary cap or schmallery cap or none of this stuff. I'm telling you what these other teams are thinking. The Bengals, the Jags, the Bills. Keep him out of Kansas City, would you? And yeah, Buffalo is, they've got to keep pushing. With the Von Miller signing and everything else, they're all in. And it wasn't enough. And now if you're Buffalo, it's not just, well, we're behind Kansas City, but if we can get past Kansas City, we in. You got your Buffalo wing sauced ass handed to you by Cincinnati in your crib, right? And so you got it. Now you got to say, okay, now we're behind the defending world champs, Kansas City, and we're behind Cincinnati. And also, what's going on in Buffalo's division right now? Aaron Rodgers going to the Jets? Miami still making bold moves? New England blows, but whatever. But still, it's like, so if you're Buffalo, you feel the heat. Like, yeah, we got to keep going. We got to keep pushing. We got to make it happen. Because they still haven't gotten to the Super Bowl. Like, at least since today, they've made it to the Super Bowl. Buffalo, during this run, still hasn't gotten out of the AFC yet.
Right.
And so they feel that sense of urgency. So they're like, yeah. Not only, yes, bring in another weapon, bring in Hopkins, but also keep him away from the Chiefs. That's got to be their mindset.
I would sure think that's part of the motivation, yeah.
But if you're a Kansas City, you can't let what other teams can do dictate what you're doing, because you're the king of the castle.
The lion doesn't concern himself right. with the opinion of sheep.
Oh, trust me, I know that. But I do think it's like, you know, like I don't want him to go to Buffalo. I don't want him to go there.
No, I don't. I'm with you on that. I wouldn't overpay. I wouldn't put yourself in a bad spot just because of that. But they do. The Chiefs need a wide receiver.
Yeah.
It's not like they're just making a move just to spite the Bills. They need a wide receiver.
Right. And for the crowd that, you know, hey, the Chiefs, just draft them. Just draft a couple of wide receivers. Somebody pointed this out yesterday on the Twitter. I mean, Tyreek Hill is one of them, but what other wide receivers have they recently drafted and developed?
I mean, nobody that's turned out to be great. I mean, they drafted McColl. He was a contributor. The kid from Georgia that was
they've drafted
okay
Sky Moore. They've drafted Cornell Powell. They've drafted McColl Hardman. They drafted Tre'Mont Smith as a wide receiver. They drafted Jehu Chesson. They drafted Demarcus Robinson.
D-Rob.
Tyreek Hill. Chris Conley.
Conley was the one I was thinking of.
And this is all under Andy Reid. And that's it. I mean, now they haven't taken one in the first round, but they've taken a couple in the second round. So
yeah.
For you just to assume, like, oh, it'll be draft one that's taken care of. Oh. Is it?
No. Especially because they don't, it's not like they have a high first round pick available to do it anyways. And I'm assuming they're going to take another defensive end with their first round
pick. Add a vet and add another wide receiver.
Yes. Do both.
What's that, Marco? You're against that? You resist? Fine then. We'll take a break. Join the resistance. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let me remind you that today I'll be at a couple of places. Coming up over the lunch hour, you can come out and see me at the new Andy's Frozen Custard location if you want to stop by and say hello during your lunch hour, or if you're not working, kids are off on, be great if your kids are off on spring break, if you want to have them come in and enjoy a delicious treat. I'll be at Andy's Frozen Custard at 115th and Knoll today from 11 until 1. Andy's will have $2 regular size one topping sundaes all day during their grand opening celebration. You can win prizes and enter to win Andy's for a year and meet Andy himself. He's going to be out there. The fun starts at 11 when I get there and then goes to 11 p.m. That's right around the time I'll be getting off the stage down at the Miller Lite Fan Fest at Hoop Central down at KC Live Stage and Power and Light. But anyway, it goes to 11. March 24th is today. It's a grand opening day, so a lot of fun at Andy's Frozen Custard at 115th and Knoll. Enjoy two sundaes on the $2 sundaes. Get two of them. $2 sundaes on the patio or in the drive-thru. Top your day with a smile at Andy's Frozen Custard today from 11 until 1. I'll be there at 115th and Knoll, so stop by and see me there. And then I mentioned tonight, well, hey, we've got some Sweet 16 action for you. It's in Kansas City, and we're looking forward to that. Should be a couple of good matchups. Houston taking on Miami, and then Texas taking on Xavier. And I think we'll get down there. We'll be on stage around 3:30 or 4 or so. down on the Kansas City Live stage. It's the Miller Lite Fan Fest at Hoop Central to get everyone fired up for the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. And so come on out and say hello, as we'll have, I think, Miami Pep Rallies at 4:30. Xavier Pep Rallies at 5:30. If you want to come out and see those pep rallies, and we can have a lot of fun as Houston takes on Miami and Texas takes on Xavier. So I'll be on stage there with Josh Briscoe and Pamela later on this afternoon. And Kelvin Sampson, of course, former Oklahoma head coach and Indiana head coach and now head coach of the number one seed Houston here in the Midwest. Here he talks about playing at T-Mobile Center. They're playing at T-Mobile Center, but he talks about his time and his opportunities playing at Kemper Arena, which gives us good old-fashioned memories of now that, of course, is Hy-Vee Arena. But here is Kelvin Sampson reminiscing about some times in Kansas City.
But back then, it was old Kemper. I went into Kemper Arena this summer, and I was just in awe of what they've done to that place. There was a recruiting event there. It was amazing. I said, first time I ever was in Kemper, I watched Wisconsin-Stevens Point with Terry Porter versus Southwest Oklahoma with Dennis Rodman. I watched that game. That was in 1983, 84, something like that. And they had a restaurant outside that had a cow with big horns. Yeah, and I never had enough money. I was an NAI guy. I just never had enough money. And I said, you know, one of these years, if I ever get enough money, I'm going to take my family in there. But I never have. They still have it. They still have that restaurant. Well, I got enough money now.
Oh, man, I remember my dad taking me to Golden Ox when I was a kid. It was a big deal. Big deal in our family if you got to go to the Golden Ox.
Still is. That place is delicious.
Oh, yeah.
We used to, my grandpa used to love going there. But, I mean, that brings back, and that was, you know, he was referencing the NAIA tournament when it was down there when he saw Terry Porter, you know, who ended up being a hell of a point guard with Portland, and, of course, Scottie Pippen. I mean, you know, we had some great times doing the Fan Fest down at Kemper. You weren't with us yet, were you?
No.
Part of it down there?
I don't think so. We used to go, when I was a kid, my dad, my Aunt Jerry, my Uncle Andy would get together and they would buy tickets to the whole Big 12 or Big 8 tournament. They were in the second to last row up in the corner. And we would go like all weekend long, and I usually would show up for the afternoon session on Friday because I had like baseball practice or whatever right after school. And by the time I'd get there for the evening session, my old man would be pretty hammered, yelling at the refs loudly, as if you could see anything that was happening, you know, to criticize the refs from the second to last row. But, man, those were some great memories, great tournaments, a lot of fun. And I loved going to the NAIA at Kemper as well back in the day. That was great.
So Kelvin Sampson in Houston against Miami in game one tonight, and then the late game Texas and Xavier.
It's going to be fun. There's two good games, you know, two good games.
I'd like to see Texas and Houston in the final, in the Elite Eight. But
be a good little, I guess it's not really going to be a future Big 12 rivalry, is it? Will they spend any time? I don't even remember how the exit's going.
I don't know. You figure it out.
Houston and Texas in the league together for 1 year or anything? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know how all that works.
It's too confusing.
Back into this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you. Thanks to all of our guests, Stan Weber, Gary Lezak, Shreya Slada, Gabe DeArmon, Jay Heidrick, Mike McFarland. All of it. And, of course, top story we've been talking about was the dramatic overtime victory by Kansas State over Michigan State last night in the Sweet 16, 98-93. K-State now advances to take on Florida Atlantic on Saturday. And our next guest, I've enjoyed monitoring his coverage of K-State out in New York. And so we thought we'd have him on, the sports director at KSNT in Topeka, who has had great content for anyone following K-State in the tournament. Glenn Kinley joins us live in New York. Glenn, good morning. How are you?
Morning, fellas. How we doing? I'm well.
And so not only are you, you know, the sports director for KSNT and following K-State in the tournament, you're a K-State alum, so this has got to be extra special for you. What was it like to cover what most people are saying was one of the best NCAA tournament games in recent memory?
Oh, man, it was nuts. It was nuts. Yeah, I try to remove my K-State bias, if you say that, because we do cover K-State and KU in Topeka. But no doubt about it, I was pulling for the guys last night. And just being in there, I was stressed out. I don't know how they stayed poised, because I certainly couldn't. I had to maybe be a little bit more intentional about not cheering in the media section or anything like that, or yelling in the media section. But, yeah, it was an unbelievable game. Moments where you just look at the person next to you, neither of you say anything. You just look at each other and you mouth wide open, like, did that just happen?
Okay, try to explain to us what the atmosphere, what the vibe was like. It's at one of the most storied sports venues anywhere in this country, at Madison Square Garden. You had these teams and these New York point guards battling all night long. You had celebrities at courtside. And it just seemed like, you know, watching it on TV, that the atmosphere was just at another level. What was it like to be inside the building last night?
Yeah, it was wild. I think the fans there were just very passionate for both sides. The chants were going before the game even began for both sides. And then it only got better throughout the game, right? One, because the game got more and more intense, and two, because the place filled up with the fans for the next game, those Florida Atlantic fans and those Tennessee fans. And so as those people got in, they may not even have a dog in the fight, or maybe they did, but they were just fired up to be watching that basketball game. So the atmosphere was insane. It felt like every basket was really earned, and there were just big ones that were crazy. Marquise Noel throws that one in when he looks like he's falling over and the shot clock's running off. Earlier in the game, one that maybe people forget about, David Gasson hits a three at the shot clock buzzer. He rarely, if ever, shoots threes, and he knocked it down. It felt like every bucket was a big one, and some of them, like I said, kind of left your jaw on the floor. The atmosphere, though, was nuts. Everybody in that building was locked in. There was nobody there that was just, you know, scrolling on their phone. It felt like everybody in there was locked in and was in awe by the end of it.
Glenn, you ever been to New York City before? You ever been to MSG before?
I can't say that I have. No, I got there for media availability the day before yesterday's game, so I got to scope it out with about 24 hours in advance, but this is my first time in the Big Apple.
How cool is that? I mean, what's your initial impression?
Yeah, I think I would say as advertised. It's this place is massive. I was flying in, and we fly by the Statue of Liberty, and then we flew like 20, 25 more minutes or something like that. And I'm like, we passed the city. Where are we going? But it's massive. It's unbelievable. I was in an Uber from the airport to my hotel, and I was trying to explain to my Uber driver the difference between the city that I'm in right now and Topeka, Kansas, where I live. And I just pointed to a random building, you know, the 10th tallest building in our from where we can see in our car. As you see that building, he goes, yeah. I said, that would be the biggest building in our town. He couldn't believe me, right? He couldn't believe me. He's like, that's not even big. And I'm like, well, it would be in Topeka. But no, yeah. Just being down here, everything feels bigger, and it's just massive. I mean, looking across the street, the New York Times building right here, our media hotel, where I was only maybe 4 or 5 blocks from Madison Square Garden, and Times Square is just a few blocks away. The team is staying in Times Square. I mean, New York City is as big as it looks like on TV.
You know, you tweeted a lot about Jerome Tang and his demeanor. You know, how fired up he was opening the post-game press conference when he was in the media scrum and he was talking about, you know, how everyone thought that he was crazy when he said at Big 12 Media Day that his team was going to go to the NCAA tournament. It's just, there's when we saw the opening press conference, everyone immediately say, hey, home run, won the press conference, but then you got to do it. But it just it's continued. There's never been a dip. I don't, you know, you've been around him. You've been at these press conferences out there, and there's this confidence, and it doesn't come off as arrogance. There's this this different vibe that I think kind of separates him from other head coaches, especially a guy that's, you know, he was a longtime assistant, but first year as a head coach, especially on this stage. Tell me a little bit about what you've taken away from when he's had a chance to speak to the media and how he has really led the way as far as being confident and having his team follow in his footsteps and be able to advance as far in the tournament.
Yeah, I don't even know where to begin on that. It's just he's unlike any other coach that we've ever seen, man. And I think I'll bring it up because I know that Coach would bring it up. I think he would tell you that starts with his faith. I think that's the first thing that he would tell you is the reason for his confidence and the reason for his demeanor. It's because of his relationship with God, and that's kind of the root of who he is. But he's unlike any other coach we've ever seen. We're talking about a guy who runs into the student sections for the Wabash Cannonball after home wins. He never has seemed to care that he's different than every other coach, whether that be in what he says or whether that be in what he does. And I think Jerome Tang says a lot of things that maybe other coaches say, but I think Jerome Tang means, and I think Jerome Tang lives it. He talked the other day about wanting his players to learn more from he and his staff, from what they see them do, rather than what they hear from them. He wanted his guys to see their staff and observe them and learn more from them. And he would tell you, and he said it in a clip I posted on Twitter the other day, he said, "My profession is basketball. My calling is ministry." To Jerome Tang, impacting these players and their lives and helping them grow as men and helping them become good fathers and good husbands someday, that's more important than winning basketball games. But I think the fact that his players know they care about him that much, that completely changes the way they play for him. You can't fake that, and they know that it's not fake. And I think they play for him. And the other thing I would add is just because of that demeanor that he has, these guys believe they could beat the Warriors right now. They believe they could beat the Knicks, I think. I really do. And when you believe that you could beat anybody, maybe you can beat anybody. And that's been huge for this team. The power of belief, something that Chris Kleiman's talked about at K-State, and it's certainly something that Jerome Tang has his team going on.
Let's be honest. They'd have a chance to get the Knicks. I mean, that's not that big of a stretch. Maybe. That's a big maybe.
Hey, where do you come down on whether or not the lob pass was choreographed, the whole argument between Noel and Tang, or whether that was improvisational?
Yeah, you know what? It's funny. I was talking with one of my buddies from Go Power Cat in Manhattan last night, and we almost disagreed. I couldn't decide. I watched it back, and to me, Tang's body language almost looked too good for it to be fake. He argues and then he throws his arms up in the air, and if that was completely coincidental, then it was the best moment that I've ever seen live on a basketball court with me being in the building. I mean, if it was. Now, if it wasn't, it was pretty dang good acting. But I think maybe that was something they had practiced before, they had in the playbook, they had talked about before. I don't necessarily think the timeout before they said, all right, dribble down the court, then fake and argue with me, and Keontae's going to throw the alley-oop. When they threw that alley-oop against KU in that huge win they had against them, which it's still just crazy to me that they'll throw it in that big of a moment. But when they did that, they said that, you know, Keontae, they locked eyes, and Keontae either mouth-oop or said throw it or something like that, and they locked eyes, and he spun around the other way, and they threw it. So I think it was probably a combination of both. I don't think it was completely coincidental, though, that they were yelling at each other and that he threw it up.
All right, now up next in the Elite Eight, it's Florida Atlantic. And, I mean, there's you can't doubt them anymore. 34 wins, 34-3. And they were put to the test in that first half against Tennessee, and Tennessee tried to big boy them, tried to out physical them, and they were able to weather the storm, and then they controlled that game in the second half in a very impressive fashion. And so here they are, 34-3, and the only thing standing between K-State and the Final Four. What do you expect from this matchup?
Well, yeah, K-State fans might be getting some flashbacks to 2018, a little PTSD, because K-State goes to the Elite Eight then, and then they play Loyola, who I believe maybe was an 11 seed, and you're saying, okay, all we got to do is beat this 11 seed. We can take care of that, right? We just beat in 2018, they're saying, we just beat Kentucky. We can take care of these guys. And now they're saying, we just beat Michigan State, and we just beat Kentucky. And so they're thinking, we can get by Florida Atlantic. So you got to make sure they don't overlook them. And obviously, that's a really good team. But also, like I was saying, they believe that they're going to win every game too. And obviously, the first talking point when you're previewing this next matchup is Marquise Noel and his ankle. You know, Chiefs fans, we're probably getting flashbacks to the Super Bowl. We're on ankle watch again. I'm going to go over to the arena today. I'm going to see how he's walking on it. They don't have open practice, but I'll be sure to get you guys the latest updates on, you know, if he's favored at all when he walks in and out of the press conference. And I think if Marquise Noel's healthy, I like K-State a lot. If he's not, man, I mean, he's the X factor, right? So,
well, you know, and we will we'll follow you on Twitter again at Glenn _Kinley, sports director for KSNT in Topeka. I've enjoyed following your coverage, and you know, K-State fans, you better follow Glenn to get the latest on that ankle of Marquise Noel. Hey, thanks a lot for the time, man. We look forward to having you on again soon.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Go Cavs.
Appreciate you. That's Glenn Kinley. And you know what? You got to. He covers them all, but he's a K-State alum. So that's right. The Go Cats at the end. And that's got to be thrilling. So you're watching that game last night. What are you looking at me like that for?
What do you want me to look
at? Try to make him feel bad about never being in New York. Try to big time him.
Is that what I was doing? I was trying to get him to talk about what his impressions were his first time. Jerk.
Hey, Glenn, you ever seen a tall building?
Hey. You ever been on an airplane before?
He's good. I mean, hey, look.
He was great.
Look, when I roll through, we're looking for good clips and comments and things that we can pick up a player on the show. And, like, you know, like we would play different clips, like five of like Glenn Kinley. I say, hey, let's maybe get him on the show since he's providing some of the best coverage anywhere. Repping Top City. And let me tell you something. There ain't nobody done as much damage in Top City as Nate Buchady back in the day, so I can promise you that. So you don't mind reconnecting with...
That's why they got that highway named out in between Lawrence
this
and...
This guy's get after in Topeka. Mm.
Not really.
Oh, really? I've heard.
I was born there.
I've heard a lot of things.
You have?
Yeah.
Man.
You know?
A lot of people with loose lips out there.
I know, right? Trying to sink your ship.
More
not going to happen.
Than one.
You know, and I'm the one that gets blamed for having a filthy mouth.
You do have a filthy mouth.
Cross the line. That was horrific.
I learned about watching you. Where are you going to be this afternoon, dude?
Why don't you learn by watching me at Andy's Frozen Custard at 115th and Knoll. I'll give you a $2 Sunday.
Ooh.
Andy will be there to shake your hand, give away wonderful prizes. Then tonight I'll be at Miller Lite Fan Fest at Hoop Central down on the KC Live stage of Power and Light. And I'll be, you know what? I'm all in for Kelvin Sampson. I'm going to wear a denim shirt tonight just to provide him with the necessary support that he needs, hopefully.
All
right, thank you. Everyone have a wonderful weekend right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Border Patrol has been brought to you by Walker Medical Linen Services, setting the standard in healthcare laundry services for hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in Kansas City. Walker Medical Linen delivers laundry you can depend on. HLAC certified to the highest standards. It's Walker Medical Linen Services, online at walkermls.com.
Bye-bye.